So as you notice, I just say, Fred, thanks for being on here. And then boom, we go. And then we'll get started.
Okay.
Fred, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
I've been anxiously awaiting time with you. And I'm not the only one. Yeah, so I got into this sport. I got into sport pickleball, as you know, and I've played a lot of sports, but there's something different about it. And it's a life changer for many people. Now, there's something else different about it. It has tested my mental game in ways that I never expected.
Was I part of that? Have I been part of
You certainly have been part of that.
that?
There were times when my
Won't
self-talk,
say what part.
yeah, there were times when my self-talk, it wasn't very healthy, and it was because you caused it. So, yes, sir. I hope the look on my face that it probably did show the frustration.
So
But
along
what
with Panda, did that have something to do with running around in circles on the pickleball
Oh yeah, when you know somebody has you on a string and they're just playing with
court?
you.
We should let that joke out. That's too funny.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, when you
Just
hit behind.
a little sidebar for everybody. One of my most fun things to do in the world in pickleball is to watch JD run around in a circle. And he's so fast, he's able to get the ball and put it back in play. That's just like, yeah, what a fun day on pickleball court when I get to see that.
Yeah, and you're testing it too. Believe me, it's running me in circles. You know, somebody asked me to play that new game, Padel or something. I'm like, the last thing I need is walls around me to run into. But yeah, so yes, it's tested me, and it has some other people being like, wait a minute. Because what I noticed, if I'm not mentally sharp, which is a challenge for me. If I'm not mentally sharp, then I can lose 5 or 6 points in a row, and boom, I'm in a tough spot. And I've noticed, I'm going to have go into specific questions. I've noticed that if I'm not intentional, it's very easy for the self-talk to just get out of control. And so talk to me about that. What do you do? Because I have people telling me yesterday, what do you do when your mind starts going, I hit a bad shot, or I'm terrible, or I can't play with these people? Fred, how do you stop that? And then what do you do about it?
Well,
Help me.
let me take let's say today you just came in and we're having a coaching session. You just said, "Hey, I want to hire you as a coach. Let's talk." And that's kind of what we're doing. So, I would back up one step first, and I would want to know what is your why? So you're going to go play senior pro. You're going to play senior pro pickleball. Why do you want to do this? Why do you want to put yourself through this pain? Or fun, or what's your why? Have you been thinking about that?
I have. And we just, do you mind me? I didn't think you were going to turn the question on me. But I wrote down on my little pad, understand your why. Can
Oh,
I?
good. Look at
I'll give
this.
you mine if you don't mind.
So the first thing on a lesson, whether it's, I taught tennis for years, but pickleball, if you came in, the first lesson we would have would be a consult lesson. We're not going out on the court, we're hitting balls. First, if you really want me to be a coach and we want to talk about that, we need to sit down and we need to have a consult, which is so we'll play this through as if we're doing this today, and I would do this with everybody else. And JD, this could get a little ugly. Are you okay with
I'm okay with it.
that? So, but no, first, seriously, first, why? Why? Why do you want to do this?
You know, the timing is fascinating because I answered that question for myself a couple of days ago, over the
Okay.
weekend.
Oh, great. Great.
Because in order to play at senior pro, I got to quit. I got to eat better. I got to exercise. I mean, if I'm going to, unless I'm going to waste money, look, I got to do something. My why is not necessarily, it actually, it's not the gold medals, although that's nice, or any of the money, or even the, I realize that I play. This is going to get ugly. I play because in some way it gives people hope. In some way it gives people hope because they can look at me and go, look at that guy. If he can do it, I can. And
He
there's
can't
people that
even chew
are
gum and walk.
exactly. He trips over himself coming into the front door. He sleeps in his clothes. He looks like he's a mess, and he is a mess. But what I notice is people that are older than I am or my age or don't have any money or in a small town or in special, I'm sorry, I got to pause because here's where I get our special needs. They'll go, that looks fun. That looks fun. And
Absolutely.
it gives me some, they're looking and going, oh, it gives me, it looks fun. The guy's smiling, me, he's having a good time. That there is, that's where the hope comes from. It's a bit of a big word, but I play because people will go, it looks like fun. If this mess of a person can do it, then I can. And that's why I do it. That's, yes, sir.
Well, great answer. And so there are a couple of things. One, you have a notepad. Lesson number one, consult. If the person's coming for that first lesson and they don't have a notepad, they're completely missing the point because we're going to talk about some things, and I don't think you'll be able to remember everything. Maybe you can, but I don't think so. So the fact that you've already thought about this is great. And the reason I ask the why, let's say we're talking about maybe a 20-year-old who aspires to go out and play on the tour, and they want to be a professional. And you might ask them what their why is. Well, I want to play on the tour. I plan on making a living at this. And so for them, it's they plan on making some money, making a lot of money, making a career out of this. That why, which is financial, which is money, is perfectly fine, but that why is not going to drive them as hard, as far, and as long as the why you just told me you have.
Yes, I noticed that in myself because when I first started, I went, I want the medal, I want the money. And then when I would start cramping, I would go, and but I, then in my head came the a youth player. A 12-year-old special needs young man that saw us play the game and says, I want to do that.
So that why really tells me how hard and how long it's going to drive you. And you have a why that is very, it's from a very solid base. That's going to keep you motivated. No matter how many times you get knocked down, you can always find a reason to get right back up and go at it again. So that's key. So once we get past the why, and we would really dig into that for a length of time. Once we get past the why, I would ask you, let's talk about the mental part of the game. How much do you think the mental part of the game is important? How much of the game is that? How big of a factor is that? If you're going to put a percentage on mental, what number would that be?
Well, I would say on my case, it's probably 70% of it because I feel it cracking down and I notice the difference. I feel when it breaks down.
Okay, so that's excuse me, that's a really big number.
Well, hey, Fred.
I think I lost you.
Hey, this is easy to edit. We just pick up where you were. I don't see you yet.
Yeah, I think I lost you. So the number that you gave me, can you hear me? Yeah. So the number that you gave me is 70%. 70% is a really big number. If you're looking at the overall theme of your development, and you have in a pie chart or wherever, you have 70%. That's a big piece. The next question I would ask you is, if 70% of the game is the mental toughness is 70% of the game, how much of that time do you spend working on the mental part of the game?
5% at tops, 5% at most. 70% may be a stretch. However, that's where I feel where I lose the most points because the mind drifts. I would say I don't work on it very
Okay.
much.
That's the answer. I've been asking this question for decades from people in sports, and I usually get, oh, it's 90. It's 95% of the game. How much of the time, how much of your time do you devote to that part of the game? And I usually get, well, none or 5%, or so right away we know, okay, that's a big part of the game that is very, very important, and I spend no time on it. And the next question that I would ask is, why do you spend 5% of your time on that part of the game? If you just told me it's 70%, we don't have to be very good at math to figure out there's a math problem here.
I don't know how. I mean, like so many people, I just don't know how.
And that's exactly the answer that I get all the time as well. I don't know how to do that. And so that would be one of the big parts of the mental part of the game is let's prioritize. Let's look at the big parts of the game that are critical, that are important, and then let's focus some time and energy on
Yes, sir. I'm writing notes.
that. Good, write it down. I'm going to give
Yeah, so
you, I'm,
I don't. I don't.
yeah.
I don't need to.
I'm going to give you something now that is probably the most underrated part of training, whether it's martial arts or boxing or soccer or pickleball, I don't care. It's probably has always been the most underrated part of it. You're going to train, and the first thing that I would tell you to put into your training on your notepad is meditating, mindfulness. Do you do that daily? And as soon as I say that, for majority of the people, you see this glazed look go over their eyes, and they start looking at their text, or you've lost them right away because, oh yeah, I don't want to. I want the important stuff. With the important stuff, like you said, when you get on the court, if your mind is wandering, if you have what I call monkey chatter, which is this whole chorus of voices going on in the middle of a game, and you're trying to focus, you haven't learned how to control your mind yet. It's still scattered. It bounces around. And the meditating is a big part of that. And that's something that I suggest for everyone, whether they're in sports or not. Give yourself 5 or 10 minutes a day. You don't have to learn how to levitate. You don't have to, have special music playing. You just sit somewhere and then quiet your mind and do it for 5 or 10 minutes. If you can quiet your mind more than 10 seconds, you now have more concentration than a goldfish. Because in our text age, our culture, most people have concentration less than a goldfish. They can't focus for anything more than 5 to 7 seconds.
Yes,
So that
thank you.
training, that lengthening out that window of where you can drill down and you can focus and stay there. When you get into a match, it's not a point. You may play a game and it maybe you'll be out there playing somebody, maybe it'll be an hour. Well, can you focus for an hour? Not many people can focus for an hour. They're going to come and go. Like you said, you have 6 points go one way, and then all of a sudden, what happened? Games are up and down. It's like a roller coaster. And with pickleball, it's very chaotic. It's very fast-paced. You have a very, very short, maybe 6 seconds between points versus the tennis background that I have. You have almost a minute, and the one set may go for, a match. You may play for 3, 4, 5 hours even. You may be out there a very long time. This is quick. So the meditating is important, and that's just an exercise. You are training your brain and your brain chemistry. You are learning how to drill down and stay there for a while. Get into the match. Stay
How
there.
about instead, how about like a pre-shot routine in the serve? I notice that if I bounce the ball, whatever the routine is, bounce the ball and before I serve, place the image and then take a breath. Because pickleball is something about it's like martial art. I did some of that too, is I would find myself holding my breath. Is that part of it too? You have little things that kind of just remind you to slow down and think about what you're doing. That
Oh,
part of it too.
rituals. Yeah, rituals are key. And interestingly, over the years, we both have tennis backgrounds that we go to. Rafa Nadal had one of the best rituals. He was doing all kinds of things. He looked like a baseball coach,
It's rituals. That's right.
He was doing all kinds of things. And people would make fun of him, but they didn't make fun of the trophies in his career too much. Those were things that set him in a routine, put him in a comfortable place, and it put him in the same place over and over and over before the point started.
Oh, okay.
And that's really the purpose of it, and knowing that is important.
Hey, there was one thing. I might bounce some, as you know, but if I do, get me back on track. There was one thing I noticed, though, that we did one time in a drill that changed, it really altered my game some, a lot, is you put little buttons down on the court and you said, just focus on hitting the button. Well, I got into a state of almost like a trance, and it was just over and over. And then, without even thinking about hitting the button, I'm all over it. But is that the kind, is that like a form of mindfulness, Fred?
No,
Meditation?
absolutely. There are drills that you can do on the court that you are drilling for concentration. When we do a drill like that, we might be hitting, maybe you're hitting your backhand cross court or dropping, or you're practicing a dink cross court, whatever you're hitting. The fact that we do that repetitively for a length of time, say even 5 minutes, is going to seem like an eternity to most people. I don't want you to think about anything else. I don't want you to stray around. We're just going to do this for 5 minutes. And when you say 5 minutes, people think, oh, that's like, but by the time you get to the end of 5 minutes, they're going to feel like they've been there for an hour because they've never focused. They've never had that tunneling, that really drilling down and focusing at that level and holding it for a long time. I do think for match play, your drill should be more realistic in game set. We're learning patterns that we would use in a game, but those type of drills are mental training drills. Those are not pattern drills for match play. It's a different thing. That's one way that you are actually developing your concentration. And when we did that, what happened after 1 or 2 or 3 minutes? You went from a level one, say, of concentration down to two, down to three. You got into subconscious, and all of a sudden you were in some space that was not probably very familiar. Like, where is this space that I'm in?
Eggs that you described it well. It was best like flow state or whatever they call it, that place. Yeah, it was. I got there, and I got there during that drill. It's the only drill I've ever done where I did that.
So those little types of meditating, doing specific drills that for most people would be something that would be completely monotonous to you, that's how you're going to strengthen your mental toughness.
Okay. So I'm making a note, and then at the end of this recording, I'm going to come back and say, so here's my homework. Is that how I do
Okay.
this thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So I also, what is, man, I ran across this article, a blog you wrote. And by the way, it's going to be the link to your website is going to be the show notes. Everyone ought to check out the blog posts. They're so good. Fred, what in the heck is a polymath? Am I saying it right? What's a polymath?
Yeah, that's a blog that I wrote years ago. And the example that I used in that was when you walk out on the court, and this was going back to tennis, but it doesn't matter if it's tennis or ping pong or pickleball. When you walk out on the court and you have on the other side your opponent, and you realize what I consider a polymath is used in kind of a different context in sport. A polymath would be someone, okay, I'll give you an example. You go out on the court and you're going to play Ben Johns. I would consider Ben Johns a polymath, meaning that he knows many different aspects of the game in great depth. He is fit. His focus, when you go out on the court, you're going to play him. Are you going to try to break down his concentration?
No, sir.
Okay. That's one. Are you going to try to break down his forehand?
No, sir.
Are you going to try to break down his backhand?
No, sir. Check the
Are you
boxes with a
gonna
no.
try to somehow get in up into the kitchen and cat and mouse with him and get him in trouble and get him off balance?
I don't know what the heck I would do.
So you have that is he would be an example of what I would call in pickleball a polymath. And in science and math, it's someone who's highly learned or skilled in many different aspects. He in pickleball, what it means is when you go out on the court, if you didn't know him, if you didn't know who it was and you started playing in a very short time, probably less than a minute, a wave is going to wash over you and you're going to think, well, he's got no weakness. He's really fast. He's really fit. He's dialed in. He's got all the strokes, and I've got nothing to hurt him. And the example that I gave is when you get on the court with a polymath, if it happens to be pickleball, what you want, these are the things you want to hope for. You want to hope for that he's not just going to play with his food and you're going to be his food out there.
Yeah, run me in circles.
Number two, maybe he'll just get bored and not want to play anymore. And that could be in your favor, but there's nothing that you can do. What it means is you are about to have your lunch handed to you. No matter what you try to do, if you try to attack a forehand, a backhand, any part of his game is stronger than your strength. So there's no way, unless he happened to trip and went headfirst into the net post and knocked himself out, not likely. You're not going to win at all. You have no chance of winning that match. But the good example is if this is a guy who's skilled in these many different areas and he's just at a completely different stratosphere from you are, what can you take out of that besides a butt kicking? How are you going to walk off the court afterwards and go, wow, this is really good. I learned a lot today. What am I taking from this? He will surgically rip any part of your game apart that he wants to. He may, for fun, just size you up and go, his forehand's his strength. I think I'll just rip that apart just to show you that I can rip apart his strength. Or he may just run you around in circles and have fun. But what you want to do is you want to make notes when you're on the court and you want to understand, look at how he is shredding my game and my brains to pieces while I'm out here on the court. And you want to make notes of that. He's just given you the ingredients, the secret sauce, the secret recipe on how to shred your game to pieces. This is really important for you to know. You don't need to know when you go out on the court how you're going to be great or how you're going to beat somebody easily. That's not going to help you become a better player. That's not going to help you become mentally tough. What's going to help you become mentally tough is having self-awareness, being aware of what you can't do on the court, being aware of what your weaknesses are, being aware of what you've missed in your training. Those are the things you put in your notebook. Those are the things you go work on. And those are the things that make you a better player. We know that strength comes from challenges. So here's a point, and this is let's say we're talking about a 3-0, a 3-5, a 4-0, doesn't matter the level. Beginners avoid this like the plague, and champions always seek it out. What do you think that might be?
Well, I have a question here. Is this where we're getting to seek out destroyers? The type seek out the people that are better than you? Is that it? Is that what you're talking?
So beginners always, I'll give you an example. When we go and we play an open play, you walk out on the court and say it's a 4-5 open play or whatever, open level, and you're playing. And the first thing you walk out there, and the guy or the lady that you're playing with, they look at you and say, hey, let's stack. Can we stack? I go, whoa, stop. We haven't even hit a ball. And what you've just told me as your loyal partner is, hey, it's most likely I got no backhand. I don't know how to hit a backhand. I can only stand over here in this one little corner and I can hit forehands and I can hit it pretty hard, but I don't have the rest of my game. I don't know what's going on out here. So we need to stack. So I need you to pick up the rest of the court and I need you to cover my backhand, which I don't have. And this is kind of the whole problem that people who don't know higher level sports get into. When I walk on the court and somebody says, hey, let's stack, I go, well, actually, I like to practice playing both sides of the court.
Ah,
And they look like they've been run over by a truck. They, what? And I go, well, I want to have a balanced game. My goal is to improve and become better. I want to know how to hit a backhand. I want to know how to hit a forehand. And in order to have a balanced game, I have to practice all around the court. And I openly do that. But they will avoid that like the plague. Somebody who's trying to improve, if we're going out and we're playing open play, the conversation realistically that we might have is I might say, well, look, you're going to Punta Gorda, you're going to a tournament next week. I know you're going that. What do you need to practice on to help you get ready for that tournament? And you might say forehand, you might say backhand, whatever the stroke is. Then I would suggest you, well, let's play this way so that our opponents can really go after that and try to attack you.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That is not the way to win this game. This is the way to help you get ready for the tournament that's coming up, to help you get ready for your matches, to help fortify and strengthen a weakness. Open play is all about avoiding your weakness like a plague. The stacking thing to finish that through. You go on the court, this person, that's what they do, they stack. And then I will also ask them, okay, well, we stack and you just want to hit forehands. Where are you going to be in 3 months? And they have this look on their face. Well, what do you mean? I said, you're going to have the same game. You're going to have a forehand and no backhand. Your forehand make it 10% better. So there'll be even more disparity between your forehand and your backhand. 2 years from now, where are you going to be? I'm going to tell you where you're going to be. You're going to be playing the same level that you are right now, and you're going to have a forehand and no backhand. You've just created a path that is not going to allow you to become any better. If you
So
want
you
to do
have to be,
anything, yeah, if you
you
want to
have
do something and you want me to help you, we would actually need to reverse stack. We would need to put you on your weak side and have you play that all the time. And if you do that, it's like weight training, left arm, right arm. If your left arm's stronger, well, you're going to have to do some extra weights for the right arm to catch up. This is just logical thinking, but this is not what the average recreational players do not think this way. Players who play at higher echelon understand this. They embrace this. They're going after, they're looking for things to expose their weaknesses.
You know, and it goes back, it's kind of goes back to the beginning, because I was going to ask you this when the hope thing comes to mind. Okay. So you have to be comfortable. You have to become comfortable failing some and losing some. And what I'm hearing you say, and like when I first started, and here's why I think people listening and viewing this that are just starting out, I showed up in a pair of, well, I mean, I'm not going to mention the brand, flat shoes. And a paddle I bought off the rack somewhere that fell apart in my hand. And I just said, over time, I'm just okay losing or okay being challenged or running in circles. And that's what I noticed to your point with a lot of the beginners is they'll say, I don't want to go do this or open play or go a level up because they're afraid of losing some, right? Or maybe looking. Okay. So you have to put yourself in situations, particularly if you have a coach there with you or somebody that cares enough that's not going to say, oh, you missed it. Put yourself in a situation to put your weaknesses out there so they get stronger. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Exactly.
Ooh, we might need to ask you that question after the call, what
Yeah.
mine are. Because I don't, I'm not sure I want
So,
to hear that.
and a lot of this could be painful, but remember, the pain is what's going to really expose things. So, another example I would give to players, and they're playing 4-0, and they want to get to 4-5. How do you plan to get there if you're stacking? But I would say to them, first, in your mind, make the shift. I'm a 4-0. I want to get to 4-5. I have to lose my way all the way to the 4-5. And they will look at me, what are you talking about? Like this fear comes over their face. I go, you are intending to get to a higher level. You are intending to get there, which means you will be playing higher level players. And if you want to get to 4-5, you're going to have to play 4-5 and 5-0 players. On the way there, you are going to get beat down game after game after game after game. If you want to stay where you are, and you want to win half of the games and you're a 4-0, then play 4-0s. You win half, you lose. If you play 3-5s, you win 80 or 90%. You can beat your chest go, wow, I'm great. If you want to get up to the next level, you have to absolutely mentally be prepared to be shredded on the court. You have to lose your way all the way up to the next level. You do not win your way up to the next level. And that's why most people don't move to the next level, because they want to win, because I want to win in open play. I'm going to stack. I want to win and I want to get better. Those things just don't go together. You are setting yourself up for a long, painful stay at that level. And if you're okay with that, if it's a 3-0 or 2-5 or whatever it is, then great. That's perfectly fine. But if you really think in your mind, the voices in there saying, hey, we want to move up, we want to get better, then you need to be realistic. And that means playing better players, getting beat down a lot.
Yeah. So Coach Fred, now I said this to someone yesterday. Tell me how I was wrong. I mentioned to him, I said, you know, somebody asked me when I started that do you want to stay social and have fun? Or do you want to get better? Because you have a choice to make. And I told these ladies yesterday, I said, well, you do both. Do both. But I said, the people that you're playing with at your level, if you get better, you might be in some groups that are not they're not going to like you, because they said that. They just don't like me because I'm getting better. I said, then find another group and then go to a group that's better than you. And if they don't accept you're not warm and welcoming, keep looking because you'll find one. But the whole fun of the game is actually getting better. I mean, that's the whole, right, Fred? Is that find some place where you're not the strongest and get better with them? Is that right?
It's partially right. I think when you teach someone, learn to teach them through their eyes and not through yours. Okay. As a coach, that took me a long time to learn that. People came out and I thought, oh, I look at their game. I assess your game. I'm going to get you to here. Do you want to go there? Some people who play pickleball, and it's many, many of the population, are there for social. You don't need to worry about getting better. Just do some drills, go out there, play social, and stay there and have an absolute blast. You will love the game. You'll make new friends and you're good. That's for that group. And that, I think, is the vast majority of the players. The coaches want everybody to get better. You teach somebody, you think, because of our own egos, well, if I coach you, then you should be improving. Maybe you don't want to. Maybe you just want to be a social player. That's fine. And then you help them with the social aspect of the play. That's why I said, what is the why? And where do you want to go? And is it realistic?
Which you just put me right back around to, wow, do it in the first place. Let me go back to something I meant to ask you about that I missed. So we're on the court and we're playing, and it's the negative self-talk. And it's to where, oh, I missed that one, or I hit that too low, or come on, you can't get it. How do you stop it? How do you stop it? And what do you say to yourself?
Yeah, you develop rituals that it might not be tugging on your shirt. It's a mental ritual. You need certain cues. So an example, you're playing and you hit a third ball drive and you hit the net. And most people that are playing, when they hit the net, they would say to themselves or even say out loud, dang, don't hit the net. What you've done is you've just programmed yourself to hit the net again. And you programmed yourself to hit the net again. That's not actually your goal. Your goal is to not hit the net. When you say do hit the net or don't hit the net, it means the same thing to your brain, because your brain is downloading the words hit the net. Positive and negative don't mean anything. So every time you tell yourself don't hit the net, you've actually drawn your attention, it's your RAS, your reticular activating system, your focus, your attention is to hitting the net with the ball. What you really want to do is hit the ball over the net. So instead of, and this is just part of your self-talk training, that's a simple example. You drive a third ball, it hits a net, and you immediately tell yourself height. That's just one word. Because I like cues that are one word. If I make that error, I may say it out loud, but I will think, height. Well, what does that mean? That brings my focus and my attention on the next ball that I hit to be 1 or 2 feet over the net. And guess what? That's actually what I want to happen. I brought my attention to what I want to happen, not to what I don't want to happen. And that's one of the biggest failings for most recreational club players is they don't have that training. They're totally programming their own mind for that negative loop to keep going back to that same place. Coaches do that, students do that. So it's height, or it might be spin, or you should have 6 or 8 or 10 just cue words of one thing where you have a weakness, but then it cues you in to do what you're looking for. If you start to wander, you might have a cue word, focus. Very simple. What does that mean? Pulls me back. Focus.
Okay, you heard me do that. I remember 2 years ago, you caught me doing that and
Is
pointed it out to me.
it on your notepad?
It is. Yeah,
But
it is.
those are really simple things, and they're actually very powerful. Something you can do that can help you again with your focus on the court is this is a little saying that I have: where your eyes go, your mind follows. You are playing a game. We're on the court, and all of a sudden, you're looking over. And I play with somebody. I won't mention a name, but I've seen him do this. And he's all of a sudden he's looking over on the other court at the match or point that's going on between the point that we just played. His mind is now on the court over there. It's not on our court where we're playing. So keep your field of vision. Keep your field of vision down on your court. And that in itself will help you avoid a lot of straying off.
Okay, so let me go back through my notes. Tell me if I've missed anything. I could keep it for hours, and I can't wait
Yeah,
to play it.
well, I will say to help people on our side on body looks, I've been writing mental toughness blogs for years, and there's a lot of free resources. Just go in there and type in mental toughness and knock yourself out there. I think there are a lot of good tips, and the tips come from actual either myself getting hammered playing at nationals or world championships or real fairly high level tournaments or coaching for a long time. It's not theory. These are things that I've actually learned along the way. It's kind of like street smartness on the court. So
Yeah,
go
Fred,
ahead.
you were like number one in tennis in your age division for what, 40 years, 30 years in the nation? So I grabbed a
I'm not
number,
that
but
old. I'm not that old,
it
JD.
was a long time, wasn't it? So
We're
you've
for yeah.
for I know you're humble about it, but so you're talking about these things because you have lived through them and you've done them and the success you've had in them. And you reference too, I want to say this now that the blog post on your website, and you've been a guest in another way as well. But anything this Body Helix puts out, whether in information or a product, is one of a kind. It is the best because, Fred,
Oh,
you
thank
test
you.
it and test it and
Oh.
test it.
I rip it apart over
Yes.
and over until I drive everyone crazy. Yeah.
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 But
So thank you.
it's great. So go to the Body Helix site. Let me see if I have my homework notes right. Now, I didn't know we were going to go this way, so I may not have them in order. So let me see. If I un make sure I know my why. And the reason why I say that is if my why is just to go have fun, then that's fine. That's a great why.
It's a great why. That's maybe the best one of all.
It is. I just
Yeah.
happen to teach a certain group
Yeah.
that it's just going in oh man, I'm pitching this. The elderly to get to a certain age, and now they go, I'm going somewhere, and people have forgotten about me. They haven't forgotten. No, you haven't been forgotten. So make sure the why is clear, even if, like you said, if it's to have fun, that's great. I would say that take notes. I wrote this down too, as I have a little notebook I take with me, and I think I'm gonna do, after every match I play, like during my drill session today, I took notes. So you're take notes often, like every
All the
play.
time. Yeah, just keep taking notes.
So to bring that down some, so I'm taking notes, and then when I identify what I need to work on, I need to find a coach that's going to help me with drills. Drills pretty important, aren't they, Fred?
Yeah. And you want drills. Some drills you want repetitive to hone a stroke. If it's a backhand down the line or something, you're going to need to hit a lot of those to get that stroke. But then as you move on, you want situational drills. So you're working on a third ball drive, or you're working on fourth or fifth ball. And so you want to have more of a play type drill, a realistic.
Okay, thank you. And then when it gets into the, oh man, I gotta write this down. Don't, yeah, I need to practice a lot more of the mental game through meditation. I mean, I said 70, 80 or 70, but then I said I don't do any, like 5% meditation. So work on the mental game just as much as you do. Hey, Fred, even if somebody just wants to play to have fun and they're just a casual, I don't have to play a lot of tournaments, but just work on the mental game. You'll have more fun, right? You'll have more fun.
Yeah, fun is a different word for other people, for many different, it's a many different words for different people. For you,
Okay.
fun might be absolutely going after it, drilling, playing national. For the person right beside you, it may be, hey, I don't want to want any. All I want to, I barely want to know how to keep score. I just want to go laugh and be on the court with my friends. And that's their idea of fun. So you have to define what is fun for you. What that's that goes back to your why and their why. Understanding
Yes,
that.
it does. Now, one more thing, and I want to end on that point you just referenced because I think it's so important. So it goes to the stuff that, the mental talk, the self-talk, and we covered that a lot, is make sure you're communicating it to yourself, the self-talk. That's another thing I have in my notes here. But I'm going to circle one. It's real important. And that is when I'm engaging with people, coach them through their eyes. Engage with them through their eyes.
What are their needs, not what your aspirations as a coach is? Because you can teach them recreational, or you could teach them how to really improve. You can do either one of those, but what do they want? And then later, if it's recreation, after 6 months or so, they may come back and go, hey, this is really fun. I'd like to go to the next level. You can't expect them to want to go drill into the sport the way you do at your level. That's not realistic.
No, and that's one of those fundamental truths about whatever you're doing, business, any kind of sport, marriage, relationships. Marriage is a tough one. Hey, let's do another one on that one day. On marriages. Okay, but whoever it is, coach them or engage with them through their eyes and the way they want to be engaged with. That works in selling anything. And no matter what someone's platform is, keep that one in mind. Engage with them. You said, coach, engage with them through their eyes. Man, have I missed anything, Fred, on my homework that I need to do before I see you Weeping Friday?
we can try the circles again. There are a couple. One book that I recommended in my blogs, which I think is excellent, everyone in sports who wants to develop, is by Carol Dweck, and the book is called Mindset. And she really goes through the focus on, let's focus on process and not results. I'm your coach. You walk off the court, and I say, hey, JD, what was the score? No, big fat no. You walk off the court, and I walk up and I go, hey, JD, how do you feel like you competed today? Because I'm coaching you, trying to bring you to the next level. How did you feel like you competed? Were you in there every ball? Did you focus well? We don't care what the score is. We don't care about the results. We're working on process. How did you compete? What things would break down? These are the things we're going to work on, and we'll get you to the next level.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. I wrote it down. I'll read it. What's the next one? You got anything else, or is that
The
well, you gotta
process, yeah.
I got a lot of homework here. Sir, you
But
got
really,
another?
learning how to focus, yeah. Learning how to focus on the process is huge. For example, you have tournaments coming up, and you think in your mind it's a big tournament. I'm going to go play in it. Well, what I would do, and people thought I was crazy when I went to nationals. I'd be going to a national championship in 3 weeks. I might be going out to California, or maybe I'm going to Austria somewhere. I'm playing a what would be considered a big tournament. And they go, how you get ready? This is a really a big event. I'm like, it's just a practice tournament. It's not a practice tournament. This is a US national championship. I said, to you, to me, it's just a practice tournament. I go, what are you, what's wrong with your brain? And I thought, well, what's wrong with my brain is when I go there, it's the same tournament. But in my mind, it's a practice tournament. I'm relaxed. I'm going to play my best tennis. I'm going to come out here and I'm going to compete really well. You are going to go out there and you're going to choke in the first 5 minutes of the first round in the tournament because you have put so much pressure on yourself that you can't even function and play.
Oh, thank you.
I'll give you one last tip. I just told a couple that are going to play a mixed doubles. They're a married couple. And I said, here's the best advice I can give you as a married couple going to play a tournament. And they were all over. I said, now I'm going to tell you this and you're going to laugh and you're probably not going to take it seriously. And they go, what is it? We'll do it. And I said, tell jokes. And they went, what? And I said, tell jokes and tell lots of them. They go, what do you mean? I said, the most important thing. And that's why when we're playing, you'll see I'll joke around a lot. For that couple, when they're playing, you will put each other at ease and you will play your best pickleball when you're relaxed and you're playing. You and I, let's say you and I are playing a match and it's 10 all and you're getting ready to serve. It would not be uncommon for me to turn at you and say something just goofy. And you would start laughing. I might break your concentration for 3 seconds, but your biomechanics, your body has just relaxed. And now, when you go to hit the serve, you're relaxed and you're hitting the serve. If you're really tight and you hit the serve, the chances of you missing that ball are much greater. So, those little cues are so simple. Tell jokes, look at your opponent. You miss a shot, smile, go, hey, next ball. It's okay. You know they weren't trying to hit themselves in the foot. They didn't need to bounce the ball off their forehead. They were trying to make the shot and they didn't. They already feel bad enough. Just laugh your way through, laugh your way all the way to gold medal round.
Yes,
Man, if
sir.
people could learn that, they would place, you know, when you're playing, when you're on a court, you're smiling, you are playing better than when you are frowning. Your whole chemistry gets stiff and tight. You do not produce the same stroke. I don't care what stroke it is, you do not produce the same stroke when your mechanics are stiff and tight as you do when you're relaxed.
Yes, sir. Thank
Yeah.
you. So, Fred, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah. They can go on Body Helix,
Body Helix.
bodyhelix.com, and reach me there. That's probably the best way.
Well, thank you, Fred. Thanks for the time. I'll do my notes. I'll do the homework. And next time we play, I know you're going to quiz me on it. You're going to test every single one of these. So
You're gonna
thank
have a
you.
pop quiz, of course.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Fred.
Oh, thank you for the time today. That was fun.
Okay. See you later.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Fred, that was great. Were you good with it all, Fred? You
Oh
did great. That was awesome.
that was
Yeah.
fun.
All right. So I'll post it pretty quick and I'll send you the links. That was a blast. Thank you. And I think you answered my questions on the things I was going to ask you anyway. You did. And I'm trying to decide whether to go to tournament or not tournament, but we'll catch up on. And thanks, Fred. I appreciate it. Very grateful.
I like when we're doing something or if we're recording something for it to be like real. This is two guys talking about pickleball. These are some real things that this isn't some made up contrived thing. This is what are we really doing out there? What's really working? What do we actually do? Be real to people.
That was a great way to do it when you flipped it back at me and we went through the coaching thing. That was great.
It's interaction, like student coach. These are the thing, real things we'd be talking about and how we'd be talking through.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well,
Cool.
thanks, Fred. Anything else? Anything you need from me? Anything help you
No,
with?
not at all. Do you need some? We have some new paddles coming in the Flick, the Gen 3,
Yeah,
and they'll have a little
actually,
bit. They'll have a little more traction on the surface. The first batch we got wasn't quite as much as it should be. So when I give you a new paddle, you'll be able to get a little more spin.
I do. And again, I don't mind buying, but I need something that has a stamp on it at one point. If when I start, I might play in a tournament starting in March. So whenever I get close, I'll say, Fred, what should I have in my hand that has Body Helix and a stamp on it? So yes, sir.
Are you going to get to play dubs with Steve? You guys would have so much fun together. Pastor Steve, I mean, he's from the same mold. You will just love playing with this guy.
You know what? I'm going to reach back out. We reached back out and said we're going to set up a time to talk, but we didn't. So I'm going to reach back out to him today. Thank
Yeah,
you.
he is a great guy, longtime North Carolina tennis player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'll reach back out to him. Thank you.
Perfect.
I'll let you know how that goes.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, Fred, are you going to the U.S. Open?
I am.
What are you going to play?
I'm going to play in mixed with Lucia, and I'm going to play with Tony Quick. Do you know Tony from South Carolina?
I do.
Yeah, we're going to
Yeah.
play doubles. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to go. I got it in the main draw in singles.
Okay.
Yeah, and if I went down, it'd probably just be for the one event. And but yeah, thanks. So thanks for the time, Fred. I'll see you a week from Friday, if not sooner.
Okay, let me know if I can help you in any way.
Okay, thank you. See you, Fred.